Ever since the publication of the Grasmere Journal, a luminous record of some 3 years spent keeping house for her brother William in one of the loveliest regions of England, Dorothy Wordsworth has been a cherished figure in the history of romantic poetry. As a person separate from her famous brother, however, she's been notoriously difficult to assess. Here was a smart, spirited, well-read woman who threw herself into a life of ardent service to her brother. So ardent, she came to resemble one of those present-day political wives whose gaze is permanently fixed on a godlike husband. Then William married, and Dorothy withdrew any claim on his heart except the appropriate one of a sister. Yet she passed out cold on his wedding day, and her profound distress on that tumultuous morning leaps from the journal like a frightened animal. Scholars have been wondering for years what to make of it. There have been countless warring interpretations of the Grasmere Journal and of Dorothy's life. Was she as happy as a robin in the sunshine of family love? Or was she tormented by incestuous passion for William? Does the journal prove, tragically, that she might have become a great writer if she hadn't dedicated herself to William and then his family? Or does the journal prove, triumphantly, that she became a great writer anyway, working within the modest scope available to her? It's a murky life with an uncertain moral, but it's also a life that beautifully demonstrates the way food speaks up, even when a very private, very conflicted woman prefers to say nothing. As I noted in the introduction, it was Dorothy's encounter with a dinner of black pudding that prompted me to start my search for the food stories in women's lives. But it was her writing, the spark in her perceptions, the great washes of emotion, the pleasure she took in the mundane, that made it clear why she belonged in this book, indeed, right at its front door. By virtue of her wide-open senses and a passion to record, she was creating a perfect context for the idea of culinary biography. To be sure, she kept a great deal of herself hidden, even when she was being effusive, and it's impossible to know how much of her own silent editing went into her journals and letters. Thomas de Quincey, who met her at Dove Cottage in 1807, 5 years after William's marriage, was struck by her eyes, wild and startling, but said she seemed nervous in company and spoke with a slight stammer. He attributed this to what he called self-conflict, an ongoing struggle between her instinctive intelligence and the sense of social propriety that quickly clamped down on it. I thought about De Quincey's reaction to Dorothy when I came across a letter she had written 13 years before they met. Dove Cottage, her journals, William's marriage, all of it was still ahead. Here was Dorothy at the very beginning, a 22-year-old woman who had fled convention to seize her own future in a blaze of love and poetry. I've gone back to that letter many times in the course of pondering Dorothy and her well-kept secrets, and I'm introducing it now at the outset of her story, because I can't imagine a stammer in this prose. She was writing in a powerful, deliberate voice, quite different from the more impressionistic Grasmere Journal. Dorothy wanted to be understood in this document. It was her declaration of independence, and she chose the language of food. It was the spring of 1794, and she and William had embarked on one of those arduous, exhilarating walks across country that he loved and Dorothy was just discovering. After years spent apart and months of secret plotting, secret for reasons that will be clear in a moment, the two of them had finally managed to meet, and they were determined to live together as soon as they could assemble some kind of home. Now they were tramping side by side in rain and mud, with Dorothy in bliss at every step. They passed Grasmere, where years later they would settle, and then stopped to visit friends in a mountainside farmhouse overlooking the town of Keswick. There, gazing at a landscape so spectacular, she exclaimed that it was impossible to describe its grandeur. She received a letter from an aunt she particularly disliked, scolding her for rambling about the country on foot, in the face of dreadful but unmentionable risks.